Here we go. Good morning, KGNU listeners, and welcome to Black Talk. Black Talk is a co-creation of the Boulder County NAACP and KGNU. Black Talk centers Black voices, Black thought, and Black vision. And today, I am so pleased to welcome as our guest, Dr. Paul Kwame. Dr. Kwame is the music director of the Fisk Jubilee Singers, and you may have heard the buzz out there that the Fisk Jubilee Singers will be visiting Boulder on Sunday, the 27th of February, 2 to 4, in the Mackey Auditorium. And today, in our conversation with Dr. Kwame, we're gonna cover a lot of terrain. And we're going to talk about the legacy of the Fisk Jubilee Singers. We're going to talk to Dr. Kwame about his time as a Fisk Jubilee Singer when he attended Fisk University, one of the oldest historically Black colleges and universities in the country. We're going to talk about his Ghanaian upbringing. We're going to hear more about the connection between some of the music he grew up listening to and singing and the music of Black Americans. And we're going to be looking at that nexus, along with many, many other things. So sit back and again, welcome to Black Talk. Dr. Kwame, could you briefly introduce yourself to the KGNU listeners? Just tell us a little something about yourself and then we will dive in.
Okay. My name is Dr. Paul T. Kwame. I am currently the musical director of the Fisk Jubilee Singers. I am also the music discipline coordinator at Fisk University. I am Ghanaian by birth. I studied music in Ghana, with my father being my first music teacher. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of education in Ghana studying music. And again, as a result of my father being a music teacher, I chose to follow his path, maybe consciously or unconsciously, because as a child, I had other interests. Mm-hmm. I moved to the United States in 1983, became a student at Fisk University, and also sang with the Fisk Jubilee Singers for the 2 years that I was here. In 1994, actually spring of 94, I started directing the ensemble first on part-time basis, and then in the fall of that year, I became the full-time musical director of the ensemble.
Okay. Now, well, thank you for that. Now, thank you for that introduction. Just to those who, again, are perhaps learning about the Fisk Jubilee Singers for the very first time, or those who've heard some of the music, again, we're going to kind of dive into some of those details. So Dr. Kwame, in an interview that you did with the New York Times, you said, if we are the ones to continue carrying this torch,
right,
then there has to be humility and not pride. What did you mean by that? Do you even remember that?
Yes, I do. Well, here is the thing. People talk about celebrity. People use the word celebrity. Mm-hmm. And I believe that when one is not careful and sees himself or herself in a position of responsibility that makes him or her very visible to the world, that person can sometimes become very proud. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I believe that I am in a position where I am simply continuing the work of the original Fisk Jubilee Singers, several musical directors who came before me, and then generations of Fisk Jubilee Singers, Fisk students who were Fisk Jubilee Singers. So for me to be in this position and for my current students, we need to really humble ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because when pride takes over, we will fall. Mm-hmm. I believe that with humility, we will position ourselves to, when necessary, examine ourselves to see if we are doing the right thing or not, and then make the necessary changes. But we also have to remember that we have the responsibility of preserving this legacy. You know, when I think about the original Fisk Jubilee Singers, particularly when I read about their life stories before they became Fisk students and then Fisk Jubilee Singers, it's just perfect for us to humble ourselves and continue what they did. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We don't want pride to come in whereby we think that we are the ones doing this by ourselves. But honestly, it is also God who is working with us and working through us to enable us to achieve our goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that is so clear to anyone who knows anything about the Fisk Jubilee Singers is that the ensemble carries quite a legacy.
Yes.
So again, to think that kind of one cohort of Fisk Jubilee Singers actually kind of began things would be kind of untenable, unthinkable in many ways, because you carry such a legacy. So please, I'm going to go through a few things because I don't want to assume our listeners, again, know the history.
Yes.
But correct me. Please correct me. Stop me. Say, Michelle, sure. Stop. You got that wrong. But as I understand it, that Fisk University, an HBCU, a historically Black college or university, began in 1866.
1866, correct.
Okay. And my understanding is that Fisk began to educate, or its purpose was to educate newly emancipated Black folks, newly emancipated slaves. Am I correct?
Education, that was the main goal. But since it was a matter of educating people, the opportunity was open to anyone who wanted to receive education.
Got it. Okay.
So yes. Mm-hmm. We also want to make it clear that the American Missionary Association, and actually everyone who had the desire to provide education for the freed slaves, knew that by providing education, the lifestyles of the freed slaves would be better. So yeah, that was really the goal. But in setting up the school, they wanted to make education available for everyone who wanted
it. Anyone who was interested in education or being educated. Okay.
Yes.
So if we're looking at 1866, we're looking at just a few years after the end of the Civil War.
Correct.
Okay. So also, as I understand it, like most institutions, Fisk needed money to operate. And so there was an idea that was hatched to take some of the school's most perhaps talented singers on tour, and that through that tour, perhaps funds would be raised. Do I have that correct?
Yes. George White, mm-hmm, who actually, before coming to Fisk, he was not a trained musician. He was in the army, but he had interest in choral music. So before coming to Fisk, he worked in different places as a choral master, for example, in Ohio, and I understand he was very well respected as a choir master. Mm-hmm. So when he left the army because of health issues and came to Fisk, he continued working as a choir director, One important thing I read about him is that he was highly interested in working with Black children. Yes, and therefore, when he became the choral director at Fisk, and the institution was experiencing the financial difficulties, he decided to train these young students and go on a tour with them. And so that's what he did. But that also gave them the opportunity to gather the Negro spirituals and transform them into art forms, which would make it easy for them to perform them as they traveled.
Got it. And so this tour was developed essentially with the idea that perhaps money would be raised as a result of these performances.
Right.
And were they following, because I thought I read something that said that they were hoping, or perhaps Mr. White was hoping, that abolition-minded audiences who lived along the route of the Underground Railroad would be moved to donate, because again, these were students with beautiful voices, and again, people would be moved to do that. But I understood also that the tour was pretty challenging on a number of fronts, that the tour initially didn't raise the money that was hoped for. And after weeks of performances, the tour wasn't even breaking even at that stage. And so, as I understand this story, the students were exhausted. Some of the places they visited were really cold, and students didn't have coats, for example. And so they were really suffering from just kind of pure exhaustion. And even finding places to stay was difficult, because again, this was a Black choral group. And so you had boarding house owners who refused to permit
them
to stay in their places or in their homes, their boarding houses. What I also thought I understood is that they decided to expand the choral repertoire, some of the songs, and that some of these songs were passed down kind of generationally, and that audiences were kind of mesmerized, you know, or really touched by much of this music. And there was someone I read about, a musicologist at that time, who had attended one of the performances. His name was Horace Boyer, I think. And he was quoted as saying, they said you could hear the soft weeping. So people were so moved by these voices and these performances that it helped raise money. It ultimately helped to raise money to support Fisk, which is still one of our, you know, oldest HBCUs, one of our oldest historically Black colleges and universities. Is that still an objective of the Fisk Jubilee Singers, to essentially not only to raise money, of course, it's to educate and to maintain in many ways these songs that have become part of, again, kind of the Black or African American songbook, but what is it still partly to kind of raise money, along with raising awareness and making certain this music is maintained?
Yes, definitely. Things have changed. And so our focus is not as much on raising funds as it is on keeping people aware of the music, or educating people about the music and the legacy of the university. But we also focus on recruiting students for the university. But one key thing is, one of the key responsibilities we have is the preservation of this legacy, the preservation of the music. And we do that through our performances, through various types of educational activities. When we travel, we make sure that our repertoire, which is the Negro spiritual music that the original Fisk Jubilee Singers transformed and shared with the world, we make sure we continue to preserve this music.
Upon a troubled water. floods are gonna trouble the water. God's are gonna trouble the water. God's are gonna trouble the water.
You know, one of the things I was thinking recently, because there's been so much more information, understanding, knowledge seeking, if you will, about HBCUs. And I think that's come about, in my opinion, it's come about since the nomination and eventual election of Vice President Kamala Harris, because there was a lot of attention paid to the fact that she was a Howard University graduate. So many people who knew nothing about HBCUs, knew nothing about the history of HBCUs or their even their existence. As I said, I have seen much more recognition in kind of mainstream kind of press and mainstream media outlets. So has the spotlighting impacted the Fisk Jubilee Singers? In other words, have more people become perhaps aware of Fisk, the Fisk Jubilee Singers as a result? Because I've just seen an elevated recognition or interest.
I think that last year's Grammy Award, which the Fisk Jubilee Singers won, and also the 150th anniversary brought much awareness of the Fisk Jubilee Singers and Fisk University to the world.
Dr. Kwame, tell us more about the Grammys and tell us a little bit more about that 150th anniversary.
Yeah. In 2016, Fisk University as an institution celebrated her 150th anniversary. Right. And one of the activities that was planned was a performance by the Fisk Jubilee Singers. We did that here in Nashville in the Ryman Auditorium. Right. And what we also did, which I would say was great, was we invited some important guest artists who live in Nashville to perform with us. So the concert consisted of definitely Negro spirituals, but other forms of music. And then the following year, we performed again in celebrating the Ryman Auditorium's 125th anniversary. Okay. We recorded songs from that concert also. Both recordings were done only for archival purposes. We honestly did not have any intention of producing an album. But then along the way, Mike Curb, who is the owner of Curb Records, came up with the idea that we should select songs from both concerts and produce an album.
Okay, so that's how that came about. Okay.
That's how the album came about. Mm-hmm. And it took us until 2020, right before the during the pandemic, when we were able to finally release it. Those of us who worked on it felt that it was worthy of being presented for the Grammys. Mm-hmm. So we did that, and that's what led us to win our first Grammy. To be honest, it changed my life. It changed the perception of the Fisk Jubilee Singers because all of a sudden, people from all over the world are getting to hear about the Fisk Jubilee Singers. Mm-hmm. And of course, one of the questions I always got was, why now during your 150-year anniversary? But that also led us to talk a lot about the importance of Fisk Jubilee Singers and their music to the culture of America. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 150 years, we won our first Grammy. People are now more aware of Fisk Jubilee Singers. So it gave us the opportunity to, you know, share our story with people who have never heard the story, mm-hmm. Just as we are doing now. And I'm sure some people may be learning about the Fisk Jubilee Singers for the first time through this program.
No, absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Dr. Kwame, got to ask you. Okay, got to go back. Let's roll back the tape. You were a Fisk Jubilee singer.
Okay. That is correct.
You attended Fisk University. What is just a memory from that time that you could share with us? Something that remains with you that you kind of hearken back to?
I remember that when I came to Fisk as a student, I did not know about the Fisk Jubilee Singers until I got to the university. And therefore, I did not even have an intention to audition to become a member of the ensemble. It was a fellow student who said, go and try. So it was that kind of attitude. I walked in, auditioned, and then I was selected.
Well, tell me about the audition. I mean, how many people were there? What did you sing?
I do not remember the number of people who auditioned, but I believe there were between 30 and 40 students who auditioned, which included returning Fisk Jubilee Singers.
Oh, they have to audition every year?
Yes, they have to audition every year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, now, who was in the kind of selection committee?
It was the director at that time. His name is McCoy Ransom.
Okay.
He has since passed. And I remember this, that I had to sing a song. I don't remember which song I sang, but this is one thing I remember. I had to do a sight reading test. And after I sight read the music he gave me a look. And I guess it was the look of surprise. And of course, then I was selected to be one of the Fisk Jubilee Singers. Personally, as someone who had just arrived from Ghana, someone who learned the Negro spirituals, sang them when I was growing up in Ghana, and now coming to know that it was the Fisk Jubilee Singers who introduced the Negro spiritual to the world, that was a moment that I will always treasure, because I realized immediately the value of the Fisk Jubilee Singers, the importance of the Fisk Jubilee Singers. And so I made a commitment that as a student and as a Fisk Jubilee Singer, I would give my best and do my part to continue the legacy.
Mm-hmm. So here you are.
And that was when I was a student.
Yeah. No, I know, but when I think in terms of your trajectory.
Right. Now, I also immediately recognized the fact that music is one of the cultural elements that connects Africans to African Americans.
You know, you've been quoted as saying that. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Well, when I think about the fact that those people who were slaves on the plantations and created the songs we now sing were transported from Africa, west coast of Africa. They were people who were born as free people who were living in their own countries but were captured and brought to the United States. And one of the things they brought with them was their music. And as a result of that gift, they created these songs that we now sing. So I always regard music as one of the elements that connects Africans to African Americans.
Your firstborn dead.
Are listening to Black Talk on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins, and Nederland. Dr. Kwame, are you familiar with the Denver-based Spirituals Project?
Yes. In fact, one of the times that the Fizz Jubilee Singers and I visited Denver, we met with them. We had some activities to do with them. I do remember that very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. I was just wondering because they are still performing. They're still out there and
right.
And kind of keeping or maintaining that legacy. Have the Fisk Jubilee Singers performed in Ghana?
Yes. Wow. So I talked about the connection. Music being one of the connecting factors. So when I became musical director, one of my desires was to be able to take the Fizz Jubilee Singers with a polished form of music back to its roots. Mm-hmm. And it just happened that in 2007, when Ghana was celebrating their 50th independence anniversary, which some people refer to as their year of jubilee, the Fizz Jubilee Singers were invited to join in celebrating with Ghanaians. So in 2007, yes, we did go to Ghana to celebrate with the Ghanaians. That was the first time in the history of the ensemble that we went to West Africa.
That must have been something.
It was very emotional because to think about slaves captured from Ghana and other West African countries coming to the United States, creating this music, which we know as the Negro spiritual, and then the Fizz Jubilee Singers transformed it and shared it with the world. And then finally, we were able to take the music back to Ghana during their year of Jubilee was very emotional. Mm-hmm. And I'm very glad that the Fizz Jubilee Singers were part of that celebration.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. Boy, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing. So Dr. Kwame, obviously, the Fizz Jubilee Singers have traveled internationally.
Correct.
Have you traveled to other countries on the continent?
No, not on the continent, but we've traveled to other continents. We've been to Italy, we've been to Spain, we've been to the UK, and we've been to Germany.
Okay.
Other generations of Fizz Jubilee Singers have also traveled to other parts of the world.
Got it.
But within my tenure, those are the countries that we've visited.
So besides the trip to Ghana, which sounds like a singular trip. what's an international trip that has really left an impression on you? You know, where perhaps because of audience reaction or some of the educational activities that developed as a result of your visit. Yeah, right. What's one of those trips that you can share with us or tell us something about?
It was a trip to Italy.
Okay.
It all actually happened this way, that one summer, the Fizz Jubilee Singers were invited to perform at a gospel festival in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so actually I asked myself, Fizz Jubilee Singers and gospel music festival, how? But we did attend, and I think we sang three or four songs. Mm-hmm. The moment my students finished singing and walked off stage, a white gentleman wearing all white walked up to me and said, I want to take your group to Italy. This happened to be the founder of the Umbria Jazz Festival in Italy.
Okay.
So yeah, he invited us to Italy, but this particular year, it was in the late 90s. We went to Italy, performed in this festival, but there were other performances scheduled for us. And we traveled in a small region, the region of Orvieto. We sang mostly in small, beautiful churches. But I also recognized that there was a group of people during our very last concert who sat in front of us, right on the floor, because there was only standing room. And as my students sing, they were also singing with us.
Oh.
After the concert, then I realized that this group of young people followed us to every other concert where we performed. So by the end of our 10-day stay, they were able to sing some of the songs with us. And it's one of those things I will always remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
I believe we had such a big influence on them that they chose to follow us.
Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. Kwame, I want to go back to something. You've spoken to it, but I just want to come back to it because I find it so meaningful.
Yes.
And that's the nexus, that nexus between Africa and African Americans musically.
Yes.
I just wanted you to, you've spoken to it, but I just wanted you to say a bit more about it, because when we think in terms of spirituals, for example, mm-hmm. and I think about the music I grew up listening to and hearing, and that my grandmother and grandmother's grandmother sang, that the music had such meaning, and not just because it sounded good.
That's not correct.
Just because it carried a message. Oftentimes that music was used to communicate.
Yes.
And it was used to communicate certain things. So if one was going to, for example, attempt an escape, the music could communicate that and where to meet. So the music, again, has so much meaning in so many ways. And I think that's part of the reason why it can so touch the soul. But I wanted you to just say a little bit more about the meanings, you know, of some of these standards, of some of this music, that it's not just music that sounds good. It's not just music that, as I said, can psychologically and also physically kind of move us, but kind of the whys behind the music, kind of the reasons for developing some of these songs. That really speak to kind of Black resistance, speak to Black rebellion, and just really speak to the souls of Black folks.
Well, you know, I believe that every human being has the ability to express him or herself in some way through some medium. Definitely Africans, when I think about performing or creating and performing music culturally, people did not necessarily have to go to school to learn how to create music and perform music. So when we talk about meanings behind songs, or when we talk about the purpose of music making, and when we talk about the spirituals as they were used by the slaves, it gives us a clear understanding of how that African thing came with them. Mm-hmm. The slaves, during the time of slavery, we know, used their music to express their emotions. They used their music to communicate among themselves. Let me relate that. For example, within African communities, before communication developed, if, for example, people in one village needed to send a message across to another village, they would send the message by playing on talking drums.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So when slaves were on the plantations, let's use the song, the spiritual Steal Away to Jesus, for example, mm-hmm. which is one of the spirituals with hidden meanings. Thomas Rattling, one of the original Fisk Jubilee singers, wrote in his book that the story behind Steal Away to Jesus was the slaves went to the plantation, worked all day, and then at night, they would cross a river to listen, to go and hear an Indian preacher. But the slaves' masters realized that if the practice of going to hear the Indian preacher continued, the slaves could use that and escape. So the slave masters made an attempt at preventing that practice. But the slaves would go back onto the plantations, and while working, one person would start singing Steal Away to Jesus. The next person close to the one who started the song would pick up and sing, and all of a sudden, the singing would spread all over the plantation. To the slave master, these were just Africans making music as they worked. Mm-hmm. But to the slaves, they were communicating among themselves that tonight, after we work, we will run away to go and hear the Indian preacher. So in this case, the slaves used the music to communicate among themselves. They did not have the drums right. on which to play, but they used music. And even today, when I listen to music of African Americans, I realize that the music is not produced just to entertain people mm-hmm. or to make money. But the music is produced in some cases to share messages with people.
Absolutely, exactly.
Just yesterday, I was in Los Angeles with the Fisk Jubilee Singers, and we visited the newly opened museum of Tupac. And I walked in and listened to him speak, read some of his writings. And then I realized what we are talking about relates to people like him. Mm-hmm. The way he knew he could share his message was through song.
Right.
And I don't know if we listened to him while he was alive, but we have people, African Americans, who are creating songs today with very, very important messages. Now, I want to go back to the Fisk Jubilee Singers also. the original Fitz Jubilee Singers, as they travel, we talked about the hardships that they encountered. People did not have much regard for them because slavery had just ended, and these people were Black young students from Fisk University. They got to Oberlin, Ohio, and were asked to sing for a group of people. And instead of being placed in front of the audience, they were placed in the balcony and asked to sing. George White had trained them to sing Western classical music with the hope that that would make it easier for the white audiences to listen to them. So that particular day, they were placed in the balcony, and so they started singing Western classical music. Okay. But it is said that people just got up from their seats and started walking about, talking. Well, if I were to take my students out today and we're singing and then people are not giving us attention, I would not be happy about it. So the original Fitz Jubilee Singers in that situation said, if these people will not listen to us as we sing, then let us sing our own songs to ourselves. Then they started singing Steal Away very quietly. And all of a sudden, people became quiet and walked back, some even with tears in their eyes, and went back to sing. The power of music. And I believe that in 1871, when the Fitz Jubilee Singers toured the United States, despite all those challenges which we talked about earlier, they used the power and beauty of their music and the beauty of their singing to win the love of people. Of course, these days we talk about riots and other types of things, but the Fitz Jubilee Singers used the power of their beautiful music to win the love of people. So for us, let me say, just human beings, there's a lot we can do with music and through music.
No, absolutely. Dr. Kwame, I have to ask this. What type of commitment does a student singer have to be prepared to make? So, I mean, audition's over.
Yeah.
You're selected. Life is good. But what type of commitment does one have to make? Because I'm just guessing that there is significant rehearsal time. You have to have a calendar that will permit you to travel. So what kind of commitment does it require to become a Fitz Jubilee Singer?
A very high level of commitment, because we do rehearse twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays from 6 to 7:40, which is not a lot of time. But then anyone who becomes a Fisk Jubilee Singer must be so committed to helping to preserve this legacy that they must also be willing to spend extra time outside of the regular rehearsal times learning their music and balancing that with all of their other academic works. They have to balance travel with everything else because they are here to graduate with specific degrees. They are not here to graduate as Fisk Jubilee Singers. But I also believe that for the fact that anyone who becomes a Fitz Jubilee Singer understands the responsibilities, there has to be discipline in order to be fully committed to being members of the ensemble until they graduate. So it does take a lot of responsibility and commitment. It therefore also becomes my responsibility to make sure that we are not overbooked when we talk about accepting engagements.
I see.
I have the responsibility of making sure that I'm not taking them out every week, traveling all over, whereby they become exhausted and and mm-hmm. I was able to perform. I'm glad you asked, because I don't know if the general public knows this, that the first Jubilee Singers are students first.
Right.
And so if people ask me 2 weeks from now, can you come and perform here? No, we cannot do that. Mm-hmm. I prefer, for example, if we have engagements booked a year ahead of time, so that I can have a schedule and allow students to know what they are commit, what I expect from them
in advance,
in terms of time commitment. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of legacy Fisk Jubilee Singers? In other words, where perhaps a parent or a sibling yeah. or okay, okay.
Yeah. One graduated last year. Her mother and I were Fisk Jubilee Singers together.
Well, I love
and,
that.
Yes.
What a story.
Mm-hmm. I taught another one who lives in Chicago now. Her mother was also a Fisk Jubilee Singer. And okay. I do have one currently whose mother was also a Fisk Jubilee Singer.
Now, has the Fisk Jubilee Singers kind of ensemble, has it grown? In other words, how many members do you have today? Was it smaller yeah. before? I had the impression it was a bit smaller in the past, but what is the number today?
I believe the number, well, today I have 16 students.
Okay.
I have always used 16, but the number has differed from director to director. Mm-hmm. For example, the very first ensemble consisted of 9, the second
That's
consisted of
yeah.
11. When I was a member of the ensemble, there were a total of 22 of us, mm-hmm. even though we all 22 did not travel together. But I have used 16.
Okay, okay. So, Dr. Kwame, you're coming to Colorado. You will
yes.
be in Boulder on
yes.
Sunday, the 27th of February. And just to give
Correct.
Kind of folks who, you know, suddenly their ears perked up, let me give some information. So the
yes.
Boulder County NAACP is bringing the Fisk Jubilee Singers to town. And again, the date is Sunday, 27th February, and the performance is scheduled from 2 to 4. This event is free and open to the public. Now, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to register for tickets. And you can go out to CU's Mackey Auditorium site, and that's where the Fisk Jubilee Singers are going to be performing at Mackey. You can also go out to the NAACP Boulder County's site to register for tickets. But again, this is a free event open to everyone who would like to come. And I'll repeat, Sunday, the 27th of February, 2 to 4. But what I wanted to ask you, Dr. Kwame, is what can we expect? So you're coming on the 27th of February. We're getting ready.
Yes.
So what can we expect?
Well, first of all, we will come as a very strong force from Nashville, Tennessee, bringing good and great music, lovely music to Boulder. I want people to come and listen and watch the Fisk Jubilee Singers, because there is an important part of our performance which will talk about the life stories of the original Fisk Jubilee Singers. This will be a presentation done with students wearing period costumes and singing songs, I would say, sounding as the original Fisk Jubilee Singers would have sounded. But that is a very important thing that we have started sharing with the world. We started doing this last year. In fact, we even produced an educational film about this. But we will present this to the Boulder community. So even if it's just that people want to come and see, mm-hmm. I do encourage them to come, because
oh, no,
they will learn a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we've been talking about this, it seems like forever. So
yes.
it's exciting to know you're coming. You know, another question that I had for you has to do with the appeal of the music
yes.
to younger audiences.
Yes.
Because when I think about my own students, when I think about just younger audiences,
right.
I wonder, does it draw younger audiences in? And if so, how? Yeah. So just tell me about that. What is that appeal to younger audiences? Because when I think about the repertoire, as I understand it, the songs are steeped in, you know, our history. And we've talked also about the legacy that the Fifth Jubilee Singers carries. But tell me a bit more about that when it comes to young people.
I'll give you a very quick, tell you a very quick story. Some years ago, it must have been about 2001, 2002, we went to New York and performed for about 1,500 high school students in the Apollo Theater. I will never forget, every time the Fifth Jubilee Singers started singing, there was total silence until the music ended and then the applause. I did not expect that level of silence.
And how many were in the audience?
About 1,500 high school students.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But it's something that I've experienced wherever we've been. When the Fifth Jubilee Singers start singing, even for elementary school students, there is silence. I don't know why, except I can imagine that, first of all, sometimes people expect students in Black colleges to sing gospel music, loud music, clapping with instruments. But then you have a small group of students who walk on stage, no instruments except the voices. I think that draws people, even young children, to listen. But then we have the responsibility of preparing ourselves before we go out to sing. And what I always tell my students is that we must know our music so well that when we stand on stage and sing, no matter who is in the audience, the individual's emotion must flow through the music, and that will get to people. If we were to stand on stage and say, sing Swing Low Sweet Chariots and seem to fake it that, hey, we want you to listen to this, and no, that will not work. We have to be so involved with the music, enjoying the music, then the audience will also enjoy. So yeah, we've had several performances for young children. We do have specific educational activities as well, where we talk about the music, we tell them why we sing this, what the songs mean in some cases. Sometimes if we have an opportunity, we get them to learn some of the songs with us. For example, Negro spirituals deal with call and response forms.
Absolutely.
We get them to sing with us. So when we actually perform, students are already prepared to sit and listen. We perform for young children quite a lot in Nashville, and sometimes they don't want to leave after we finish singing. You know, they want to come and talk with us, which
love
I love.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And I was asking because I wanted to make certain listeners who are planning to attend are free to bring their, again, their children, people, in their lives, because this is for everyone. And
that's correct.
For absolutely everybody, you know, who's open to listening. And so we are so, Dr. Kwame, again, I'm so thankful for you making the time this morning to talk to us about the Fifth Jubilee Singers. And we cannot wait, because, you know, we had it on the books.
Yes.
It just didn't work. And then we had a pandemic.
Right.
We're still in the pandemic, but we're making it work anyway. And
yes,
so
I'm glad.
I just wanted to, again, thank you. If I get a chance, I'm definitely going to make certain to meet you and to try to meet some of the singers as you come to town. I can't wait. As I said, we're really excited. So everybody remember, February the 27th, Mackey Auditorium, free and open to the public, 2 to 4 on that Sunday afternoon. Please, please, please do yourself a favor. Do your friends a favor. Let them know that this is coming. And as I said, thank you so, so much.
You're very welcome. I look forward to meeting you in person.
No, thank you, Dr. Kwame.
Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine. Heir of salvation, purchased of God, born of his Spirit, washed in his blood.
I'd like to thank you for joining us today for this particular segment of Black Talk featuring our guest, Dr. Paul Kwame, the music director of the Fisk Jubilee Singers. And I look forward to being with you again next month, within a month. We air next month on Thursday, the second Thursday in the month, between 8:30 and 9:30 a.m. Looking forward to it. Thanks again.
Perfect submission.